Well, good afternoon. I'm really happy to be here. And yes, I don't think everybody's concerned about public health and prevention. That's why my chair was about 2 inches from going over the end of the platform there. So we still have some work to do. Should I be disappointed that I have no financial relationships to disclose? I don't think so. But I wanted to start off with the overview. This is the overview slide. And if you look here, this is work that's been commissioned by the Commonwealth Fund and the International Health Survey. And what I want to do is just look at where the U.S. is on the right-hand side there. And this is only one snapshot. But if you look at quality of care, effective care, safe care, coordinated care, patient-centered care, you look at access, you look at efficiency, you look at equity, you look at long, healthy, productive lives, and you look at health expenditures. Well, what's clear is that most of the U.S. rankings are in the worst part of this curve, of this continuum, which is the pinkish color. And if you compare how much we're spending, which is in 2009, this was $7,300 a person, to the other systems which look a lot better, and on average you're spending half as much, you see that we are in need not only of health insurance reform, which we have had, but we are in need of health reform. This is the comparison of spending on health over a period of 27 years, and it's not hard to spot the U.S. It's nice to be number one in some things, but perhaps not in expenditures. And you can see how we've really distanced ourselves from the pack. And in 2007, the total expenditures on health as a percentage of our gross domestic product was about 16%, which is roughly twice what it was in the other OECD countries, the other countries we compete against. How are we going to be competitive? We have worst outcomes. We're spending twice as much. How is that going to affect our productivity? So we have health care reform or health insurance reform, and I think despite all that I've said, this is really critical. Now, it is disappointing to some of us that we've decided that those people, you know, it depends how you got here and whether you are legal or not, whether you can have access to care. But leaving that aside, there are 32 million newly insured, and that's about two-thirds of the total. And the hope we don't have much backsliding, although that's a whole other lecture. But we are having a reorientation of the health system towards primary care, towards evidence-based care, and towards public health infrastructure. I don't know if infrastructure is the right word or capacity might be a better word. So the access issue, of course, as Paul mentioned, is going to be very affected by the primary care shortage. We're already 16,000 providers short. They're needed just in the health professional shortage areas, which are not all the areas that need them. And we need an additional 35 to 45,000 additional adult primary care physicians by the year 2025. We also need expansion of the community health centers to make them FQHCs, the school-based health clinic, nurse-led clinics. We're going to need all these pieces if we, in fact, are going to get anywhere close to providing real access, not just coverage. And we have to expand that workforce. So here are the overall arching provisions impacting public health. I'm sure you all know these by heart, but I'll go through them quite quickly. One, no cost sharing and higher match for U.S. Preventive Services Task Force Preventive Services. I think the A and B recommendations, that's a step, real step forward. Remember that before, Congress was making decisions on an individual basis of what was going to be covered and what was not going to be covered. And I don't know, Congress has a lot of expertise, but I'm not sure that's one of them. Comparative effectiveness research, perhaps not as much as some of us would like in the legislation, but some opportunities there. The CMS Center for Innovation, pilot testing payment models to improve quality, and this notion of accountable care organizations still to be fleshed out, but the right answer because we need to be accountable, more accountable than healthcare has been in the past. And enhanced data reporting so that, in fact, we can look at trends. That really takes what we're doing in primary care and even secondary and tertiary care and moves it into the public health sphere where we can analyze that data. There is a dedicated stream of funding for public health. That fund goes from $500 million in 2010 up to $2 billion by 2015. And some people would have liked another version of this that had a lot more authorized, but it never would have gotten appropriated in no uncertain terms. So that's good news. And the greatest opportunity, perhaps long-term, on the health side is the National Prevention, Health Promotion, and Public Health Council. That I think you all know has most of the cabinet secretaries on this, and it basically says what you're doing affects health too. The Surgeon General has the responsibility of coordinating that, and that's to be seen, but the first strategic plan is already out. It needs to be more connected to the 2020 health objectives, but directionally it's very nice to see. There'll be grant opportunities for public health. Some have already taken advantage of those in the stimulus funding, but in the healthcare reform, there's the community transformation grants, and we really hope that they will be truly transformative and work in partnership with the community. And the public health infrastructure grants, lab capacity grants, all of which are going to increase the capacity at a time when there are difficult financial straits for many localities and for many states. And then workforce development, an increase in fellowship positions, a loan repayment program for public health practitioner. Wendy Braun is here from HRSA, who's in charge of the public health workforce issues. So you just talk to her, she'll give you a big check. So what's the road ahead for local health departments? I think there's going to be much greater use of preventive care services, which is something we fought for very hard, and there could be, and hopefully there'll be subsequent improvement in health indicators. But let's remember that healthcare is not the primary determinant of health. So if we want to move the needle, this is one piece of it. It is not the whole pie. Secondly, will there be enough provider capacity? Well, one question is, if local health departments see a reduction in the demand overall, should local health departments become a provider and contract with third-party payers as part of this integrated system of care? What's going to happen to those systems that already, those few places that have robust public health safety nets? Exchange insurance products are likely to be managed care. How do we prevent adverse selection to the public system? And we have plenty of lessons, not all of them we'd like to revisit from the Medicaid experience. How do we meld local programs now? For example, the Healthy Kids program in California and in Los Angeles, we have a big outreach program to get applications in on that, and current application structure on the MA funding, which gives us administrative claiming and Medicaid, which helps support public health agencies. And how do we orient our local public health? Are we going to be the way we've been, or are we going to be more like the National Prevention Council, where in fact we say we're going to organize all the sectors, all the partners, help them understand how they affect health, be more sensitive to their needs as well, because it's not just that the whole world has to become health-centric. We need to become transportation-centric and housing-centric and all those other things, and education-centric. But are we going to do that at a local level? Because if we don't do that, I think we might as well go home. There will be greater emphasis on accountability and performance measures and using data in management decisions. I think certainly accreditation is a step in that direction. It may not be, it's going to move progressively. It's going to start focusing primarily on processes and inputs. I hope over time it will move towards outcomes, and assume it will. And then we will have much better race and ethnicity reporting to track the disparities. And you can't get to the disparities just by dealing with access issues. In California, for example, Latinos have the highest rate of uninsurance, and yet their health overall and their longevity is better, much better than African Americans, who have a much higher rate, and longevity is better than whites. So it's not all about health insurance. There will be increased reporting burdens. There will be a stronger need for public health IT. There's going to have to be more investment there. There are going to be improvements to surveillance, and we'll have surveillance that now can also look at healthcare, not just at some of the health parameters that we get from our various surveys. And there will be consolidation or formal MOUs between smaller health departments. The very small health departments that don't have the capacities, the core capacities to do the essential functions, I think, have to think very seriously about how they're going to work with others, either combined structurally or functionally. But either way, it has to be real and not just on paper. Reform fits in with other legislation. That's some good news. The health information technology, health information exchanges is important, and the ARRA investment. How many of you in this room, by the way, have ARRA funding? I would say about half. That's very good news. And that has short-term outcomes. One of the things we have to be able to do in public health is to show effects in the short term. We're very long-term oriented, but we also have to be short-term. We need a balanced portfolio. And we also are going to have a greater role in collection of health indicator data. And one of the roles we have not played that I think we should play, and that is much more quality assurance of the medical delivery system. I mean, who is going to tell people, you know, the truth? Who's going to be the most objective arbiter and to recommend or at least give people the data in ways that they can decide what providers they want to go to? I think public health needs to take that role as well as calling out things that don't work. Okay, challenge and opportunities. We need a broader range of partnerships. Anybody who doesn't believe that, I'd like to talk to afterward at the woodshed. And then there's health and all policies. We have to engage these other sectors. We have to get the decision makers at all levels of government, and we have to monitor those, not only the population health, but we have to monitor the social and the physical and the economic determinants of health, because we know that they are causally related. And we have to build those into a civic improvement process at every level. So I was asked to talk, actually, just give an example of how it will affect one program, immunizations. I think there will be continued support for improvement of immunization levels in physician offices and clinics, but at a time when we continue to have increases in the number of vaccine-preventable diseases, which is good, but also makes things much more complicated. Local health departments can consider becoming contracted providers to administer vaccines for groups. In many cases, they're set up to do that. I think we need to increase health education and social marketing efforts to share information about vaccine safety. What's serious is that many parents today have never seen the ravages of these vaccine-preventable diseases. And so they hear about things like, you know, this spurious connection with autism. And even though the paper's been retracted, the investigator's been discredited, they still are afraid of autism. And you have parents coming in, particularly, by the way, well-educated, higher-income parents who say, you know, I don't think I want my kids, or I just want these immunizations and not those. We need to be the folks that say, you know, that's wrong, and it's not right for your kids, and we need to educate them. We need to expand childhood immunizations through work with school clinics. And I don't know about you, but we have in California personal belief exemptions. Also, it's easy for some parent to say, you know, my belief is that immunizations aren't necessary and they can get into school. Otherwise, they have to be fully immunized. We haven't provided the right incentives. We need increased private physician implementation from the ARRA meaningful use requirements. Collecting data. In LA County, we have about 50% of kids less than 6 years in our registry. A lot of places have more, but we have 150,000 new births a year. So just think about the how complicated it is. The Healthy People 2010 goal is 62%. And it's deep in your purse somewhere. Get a shovel, right? In January 1st, 2011, there'll be a commentary allowed on Medicaid adult health quality measures. We should be active and we should be united about that, and an opportunity to include adult immunizations. And we also need to include immunization quality measures in the national strategy to improve healthcare quality. And finally, policy efforts. We need to engage in policy change on the process for allowing personal belief exemptions. I think, for example, that you should have a video that every parent should see that show what they're doing if they decide not to immunize their child. Some educational program, some involvement of a physician. And then legislation involving the scope of practice to expand the use of alternative providers. I mean, there's no reason that you have to go into a physician's office to get an immunization, but everything has to be in one record. Everything has to be in one record. I don't care if you get it at Walmart or a pharmacy or wherever, but it all has to be part of one record. And follow the HCR rulemaking for issues determining the provider reimbursement of these services, especially vaccinations. There may be no barriers, but the question is, are there the right incentives? And then provide the incentive for registry use or immunization data collection quality measures. There are large differences in terms of immunization rates, and there are pockets of population that still need attention. And we also are now moving into the middle school area where we're, for example, we have a terrible epidemic in California of pertussis. And you know, we need to move so, and are moving, so that there's a requirement to get into middle school that you be up to date. So increasingly, this is going to become something through the life course, not just for children. So that concludes what I have to say about immunizations. But if I had to have one, if I had to make two final points, it's let's remember that we still have not done everything we need to get to where we want to go. We're way behind, despite the fact we're spending twice as much, and we need to think of the underlying determinants of health all the while that we're implementing these important reforms in this health insurance reform package. So I know that all of you are great advocates, very articulate. Let's do it all together. Thank you.